Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Tomlin moments away from addressing the media before the final regular season game of the year against the Cincinnati Bengals, Saturday night, 8 o'clock at Acrisure Stadium. Our guys, Fan Game Day, will get you ready for it. Donnie Football, Mark Cabali, and Jason Mackey. We have Bob, who was on for the first portion of the show today, just getting everything ready on the South Side. Fan Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the text line, which has been very active today, is brought to you by Egger Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Brian Bacco will join us as well after the Mike Tomlin presser. He is here in studio getting ready to react. It's the final presser of the regular season for Tomlin. Very interesting. I'm very interested to hear what he has to say, because it's got to be asked about the concerns with maybe Deshaun Elliott and Patrick Queen and Cam Hayward, everything that was said in the locker room after the Chiefs game. That's probably going to be asked. I'm interested in the injury report with Joey Porter Jr., because someone is going to have to guard Ja'Marr Chase and someone is going to have to guard T. Higgins, and it might be a Yoshi Vosh game over the middle on a couple of big plays on third down. Would not surprise me if that ends up being the case for Cincinnati. But here's Mike Tomlin.
Excited about getting started this week in preparation for the Bengals. Last Thursday, we came in after Christmas Day's game and met and analyzed not only that performance versus Kansas City, but really looked at some trends in most recent performances, and specifically some things that we have been talking about in this setting, things that have been building blocks for engineering victory for us, the turnover culture, our ability to safeguard the ball, our ability to get the ball. Really in recent weeks has been compromised, and we looked at that and analyzed that in an effort to flip that trend. Certainly, we've done a nice job largely over the course of the season of taking care of the ball and on the other side of getting the ball, but I think our inability to do those things really kind of shape the most recent performances, particularly on Christmas Day, man. We turned that ball over going into the end zone. That's significant. We turned the ball over at the start of the second half on the short field, provided those guys a short field, and you just can't give offensive units and offensive players like Mahomes short fields. You can't take points off the board when you're in scoring position. Touchdown, a field goal, and obviously with the ridiculous consistency of Boz this year, when you're turning the ball over in the red zone, you're definitively taking points off the board. Coupled with that, because it's two sides to the coin, we haven't seized opportunities when the ball has been on the ground or tipped up in the air. Our punt team, I think for the second time in two or three weeks, has had a ball on the ground that we weren't able to recover. We had a ball tipped up in the air that we had an opportunity to catch that would have given us great field position around the 30-yard line. We didn't catch that. And boy, you just need those type of splash plays, particularly when you're in tight ball games versus good people. Oftentimes it shapes the outcome of the game. I think back to the first time we played Cincinnati. We gave up a pick six early in the game, but we created a defensive score later in the game to offset that, and we won essentially by one score. And so if you're not taking care of it, you certainly better get it. And ideally, which is what we've done over the large part of the season, you want to be able to take care of it and get it. From a health standpoint, man, it looks like we're moving in the right direction, which is a good thing. Last game, we had some significant people coming back, and Deshaun Elliott and George Pickens, to name a couple, Dante Jackson. This week, it looks like Joey Porter is scheduled to make it back, along with Ben Skowronek. And so getting a healthy outfit, particularly as you get toward the end of this season and lean in on the single elimination tournament, is big business for us. We're excited about the issues of dividing the labor up and having really a full stable at our disposal in the effort to formulate plans and make plays. It's going to be needed, quite honestly, because Cincinnati is red hot. And so let's talk about them and talk about what they've done to kind of produce this four-game win streak that they're on. First of all, defensively, they're taking the ball away. I think they've got 11 turnovers since the last time we played them. I think that's number one in the NFL in that span. But not only taking the ball away, it's just when and where it's happening. They were playing Dallas. They were in a 7-7 football game. They had an interception in the red zone that took 7 points off the board for Dallas, which was significant. Cleveland goes down the field on the first series of the game. They get a turnover on the one-yard line. I thought that was significant. Top of the second quarter, they were playing Tennessee. Tennessee was up 14-7. They were in field goal fringe. 91 came through and took the ball away from the quarterback. And not only did, you know, they not get a field goal, but obviously the Bengals got the ball. And I think that's just kind of reflective of how they've been playing. Denver had the ball at about 2 minutes left to go in regulation just the other day. They had a big interception from their linebacker and underneath coverage. And so not only are they getting turnovers, but they've been really opportunistic in terms of the when and where, the significant moments to preserve points in a timely place on the field from a field location perspective. And that's what good defenses do. They've done a lot to kind of generate those opportunities. I think they've been really aggressive in terms of secondary blitzers, Mike Hilton in battle in particular. They bring them in all downs, first down, second down. They really discourage and cut up your run game with some of the negativity that they're able to create with some of that pressure. You get behind the sticks, you know, you're in a bad circumstances with these guys. 91 leads the league in sacks with 14. And so if you get in a one-dimensional passing situation and you're behind the sticks, chances are he's got an opportunity to wreck things. And he's done that really consistently. I think he closed the Cleveland game out with a sack late in a one-dimensional moment, for example, since the last time we played him. And so those are some of the things that are going on defense that really have our attention. Really, on the offensive side for the Bengals, man, it's more of the same. Joe is putting up MVP-like numbers. I think he's thrown 3 touchdowns minimum in every ball game since the last time we've seen him. He's spreading the ball around to a variety of eligibles. Certainly, Chase is getting it, and T. Higgins is getting it. But everyone's getting it. Shoot, last week, the tight end, I think, had 12 targets. But he threw for 400 yards. And so when you're putting up those type of numbers, everybody has an opportunity to be significant. We got to do a real good job of playing as a collective. That's what's required when you play a group that's as hot as this group is and a player that's as talented and hot as Joe is. It's not about individual playmaking. It's about collective playmaking. It's about rushing coverage. It's about mixing things up. He has great continuity in terms of the people that he works with, not only his eligibles, but from a staff perspective. When you play a guy like that that's on top of his game, that understands where people are, that understands what's asked of him, that understands his schematics inside and out. You better also focus on yours and what you do well, and things that you know and understand and can execute under duress. And so, you know, that'll be our mentality. It'll be 60 minutes of playmaking. Just like last time, man, he made some plays. We made some plays. We better make more if we want this game to unfold in the manner in which we desire. Certainly, they're a motivated group trying to play their way into this tournament, but certainly we're a motivated group, to be quite honest with you. We got to get the stench of the last few performances off of us, and there's no better way to do that than a home divisional win versus a formidable group going into the tournament. And so that's our mentality as we stand here today. We had some real good meetings to get things get kick-started this morning, and we will continue excited about doing it in Akershire at prime time on Saturday night. Some injuries that I didn't mention. You know, Corey Trice, you know, might be limited at the early portions of the week, but expect him to be available. Same thing could be said for Jaylen Warren and some other guys that are managing some bumps and bruises. But to come off of a long weekend like we have, man, that's been a benefit to us. Guys that have needed rest have gotten rest. Guys that have needed rehabilitation have gotten that. And so we're excited about starting our physical work tomorrow. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, when you met last Thursday, did you address some of the kind of bickering that was going on among the defense about each other, and did you quell that kind of?
You know, I didn't do much about it, man. They bicker because they care, and we weren't playing well. And oftentimes, the solutions is born out of conflict and confrontation, particularly when you're in the business that we're in. And so we're not going to let an issue like that be a big issue. It's really not. Guys expressing truth and working to seek solutions, and sometimes emotions are involved in that. And so most of the time when you get out of those circumstances, you're able to move on as a collective, and I feel like we certainly have done that.
How did you treat, this was almost as big as your real bye week. It was 11 days, this was 10 days. Did you treat it as a bye week or in terms of its structure?
We certainly did. Meaning, as I mentioned, we gave the guys some time off. Those that had an opportunity to get some rehabilitation got it. And it gave us as a staff an opportunity to reflect on some schematics and how we're dividing the labor up to make sure that we're, you know, extracting all the meat off the bone in those regards.
How do you assess the mentality or just the mental state of where your team is right now going into this last regular season game?
I feel really good about what I felt from them today. We were very transparent about what needs to be done and our course of action in an effort to create it. But again, I think we show mentality with our urgency and how we work. And so I'm excited about getting back on the grass tomorrow and starting the process. But some bright eyes, man, some rested faces. Felt real good about what we were able to get done in the classroom-like setting this morning.
Mike, what's your method of motivation and connecting with players when you go through a tough stretch as you've just gone through, knowing that the tournament is coming up?
Really, for me, it's no different. I'll utilize whatever tools at my disposal in an effort to get their attention. And more than anything, I'm really transparent, but I'm the same way under good circumstances. And I think that's important as a leader. There's a lot of emotions in this game, man. Those that get an opportunity to play it, my job as a leader is to be what they need me to be. And so from time to time, that could be a myriad of things. But largely, I motivate through information. I'm one that believes you give a capable man viable information, he does the rest, and that's the spirit in which I coach.
Mike, Sean Elliott after the game talked about how there were mistakes that were happening in week 17. They think those are weeks 1 and 2 mistakes, and you know, as far as coverage breakdowns and mistakes leaving guys open, when those things are happening at this state, this late in the season arc, personnel switches, changing how you use guys, something that you guys are considering right now, and what might some of those?
Oftentimes, those lapses that you mentioned are occurring because of personnel switches. Deshaun himself has missed a block of games in recent weeks. Dante Jackson has missed some time. Joey Porter has missed some time. And so what you've been looking at is some of those personnel changes that you suggest. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about having all the guys at our disposal in preparation this week.
Mike, from an on-field standpoint, can that cohesion come back pretty quickly?
It better, huh? You know, no rest for the weary, man. We're excited about it, though. It's the National Football League. You know, the road is getting narrow, and it's good to be in the position that we're in. Certainly, we could be in a better position, but by the same token, we also could be in a worse position. And so we are where we are. We're excited about the opportunity that is this week and beyond.
Russ, you talked about turnovers. Russ has had a couple, the last couple critical ones the last 2 weeks. How do you approach a player with that much experience who obviously kind of knows better in general? What's your message to a guy like that?
Much like I was talking about my motivational tactics, it's information. I'm information-based in my leadership. And so, you know, we talk about the realities of what transpired and why and how we can minimize the potential of it occurring again. Not only as it pertains to his negative plays, but anyone's negative plays or the collective's negative plays. I'm an information guy.
Mike, after Wednesday's game, Russ kind of emphasized the need to respond the right way and get on the right footing going into the playoffs. How do you do that?
Win.
How important is it to change the momentum? You mentioned getting the stench of the last game off. How important is it to do that in the regular season before you reach the playoffs?
As I mentioned, I think it's significant for us, and that's why we're excited about the opportunity that is this week.
If the Ravens win at 3 o'clock, do you consider resting people? How do you approach that? Do you know? I mean,
I haven't pondered that at all, to be quite honest with you. That might be a thought for later in the week, but as I mentioned, I think it's significant how we go into this tournament, and so I doubt that I'll be in that mentality that you mentioned.
Mike, when you mentioned the injuries, I don't think you mentioned Justin Fields. He was inactive the last week. Do you expect him to work back in this week?
I do.
What are the injuries for Corey and Jalen?
Just in-game wear and tear, bumps and bruises associated with play that may limit them at the early portions of the week. But not going to be significant in terms of their availability.
Jalen's been an effective runner and receiving back when he's been in the game. Just what is it about him, especially the last 2 weeks, that's kind of created that?
You know, he's a good player. He missed, you know, some time due to injury at the early portions of the season that probably slowed the overall trajectory of his game in 2024. But when he's available, he's significant. He's significant in the running game. He's significant in the flat passing game and in space. He's just got a nice skill set, particularly as it pertains to winning one-on-ones.
Mike, how much more is Joe Burrow using his feet? Is he kind of back to where he was a couple of years ago as far as that standpoint?
No, I don't see any change or trend since the last time we played him. He does a nice job of extending plays, buying time for guys to get open. Oftentimes people allocate seven to defend their upfield runners, and so plays don't always unfold in a timely manner. He's got big-time mobility. He's got great field presence, and he utilizes both in an effort to make plays, particularly in weighty one-dimensional moments, red zone. He had a touchdown against us in the red zone running up into the pocket. He did the same thing versus Cleveland. It's just typical Joe Burrow from my perspective.
Mike, is there other things in particular that you guys have to improve as far as protecting those escape lanes? You know, plays that Patrick Mahomes made last week and Lamar Jackson, but those more about the fact that you're playing these high-caliber opponents?
You know, I think a lot has to do with the special talents that the two guys that you mentioned have, and that's why they're routinely mentioned as you know, MVP-like candidates. But again, for us, it is the collective. It just is, man. If we're rushing four, we got to do a good job of maintaining coverage on the back ends. If plays get extended, if we rush five or more, we got to do a real good job of getting home and do a good job in coverage, particularly in those one-on-one circumstances that oftentimes five or more creates. And so for us, it's about a mix. It's about rush and coverage working together, however you slice it, and reaping the rewards of guys understanding the collective component of our operation.
On Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday, you have to wait till Sunday to know you play Saturday. You have to wait till next Sunday to find out you play Saturday, Sunday, Monday. How do you kind of keep the routine and keep it or establish it for your guys?
It's ball for us. It's ball for everyone. I know it's great for the fans. And so from that perspective, I don't waste a lot of time pondering the possibilities. I simply wait for news and try to do the best I can to prepare regardless.
George Pickens seemed visibly frustrated at the end of the last game, just on the field. What have you seen from him, and how have you two interacted since then as far as what you guys need from him in big moments?
Just saw him in the training room. Eddie had a smile on his face. It was good to have him back. Certainly the game didn't unfold the way he or we would like. But as I mentioned, you know, frustrations are a component of losing. I tend to focus my energies on constructing victory and worry less about those things. We got good people, including George. We're able to get over some of those bumps in the road that's associated with failure and keep it moving.
How much is momentum at the end of this regular season heading to the playoffs? Is there a correlation there if you want to make sure you're...
You know, in some instances it has been, in some instances it hadn't. But I think given a preference, you certainly prefer momentum.
Like, is there a number you feel comfortable with the going into the game with Boswell? He can go X amount of yards, or does he tell that to you pre?
You know, just in general, I feel good with Bos under any circumstance. But oftentimes, in-game circumstance will dictate, you know, the outer reaches of that range, and into the field, venue. There are a myriad of variables that kind of go into the equation. But just know that, you know, I feel pretty good sending Bos out there under any circumstance.
When he's been this dominant or this perfect kicking, do you even mess with it? Do you even talk to him, say anything? You just let him do what he does?
You know, we got a relationship, certainly, but it's not a lot of coaching required, man, when you're, you know, the success rate is what he's got going on this year. He's been a big-time asset to us, certainly.
You talked about some of the shortcomings you guys have had, you know, turnovers, things that you guys have been good at. How do you coach this team to get back to doing the things that it's been good at outside of this past 3 games?
I coach them the exact same way that I've coached them in that regard all year. We've had that agenda all year, and largely it's been good for us. We didn't wane in terms of the agenda. The production has not been what we wanted it to be. But it doesn't mean that we change our approach to business or our values. We value protecting the ball. We value getting the ball. We're going to continue to live that life. We're going to continue to emphasize it not only in our words, but in our physical action leading up to performance. But we've done that, and it will continue.
Do you value having players who've been part of a turnaround, like the 3-game skid you guys had last year? You win 3 games to get to the playoffs. Is that something that you value or even think about?
You know, I think that everybody in these locker rooms, not only ours, but others, have been a part of things that you mentioned. You don't get to, you know, perform at this level unless you've smiled in the face of adversity and overcome some things. And so I generally always proceed with that assumption. I proceed with the assumption that we all have a can-do approach, that we're all products of experiences that have put us here, and it's been a lot of success, a lot of smiling in the face of things. And so we don't waste a lot of time pondering that. We just know that it's there for individuals and for the collective.
Mike, on the interception that Russ threw against the Chiefs, it looked like maybe George broke off his route a little early. Was that the case? And how do you maybe assess the effectiveness of George's route running?
Not at all. George's route running had zero to do with that interception. George was fine last weekend or last Wednesday.
Mike, you have 3 young offensive linemen that are at or are going to cross the most ball that played in the season. How do you assess how those guys are kind of holding up to the toll of the course of the year?
Man, I've been really pleased with their performance and their ability to, you know, grow in the midst of accumulation of a lot of snaps. You know, but they bring a unique background. You know, Mason McCormick, man, went, you know, been a part of national championships. He's played 15, 16 games in the college season. Zach Frazier is as experienced as a rookie can be in terms of starting and playing in a Power 5 conference. And so, you know, I think that although I've been pleased with their ability to sustain, I don't know that I'm surprised by it, given what I just outlined for you, particularly regarding those two.
Like in both the Ravens and the Chiefs game, there were some touchdowns in the end zone by both of those opposing teams with players wide open. You mentioned you looked at trends. Was there something, a common thread between those? Was it schematic? Was it communication-based or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both.
Mike, how do you determine if you're going with Beanie or Cam Sutton? I know Sutton's been getting more late recently.
You know, I think we determine divisional labor week in and week out based on a variety of variables. Is no different than the conversation that we have regarding Landon Roberts and Peyton Wilson, for example, or the tight ends. You could pick any component of play. We divvy the labor up, and we try to put guys in position to show what they're capable of and things that provide the best matchup for us relative to those that we compete against. And so the nickel position is no different than the inside linebacker position or the tight end position or the wide out position where we play multiple people in certain spots and particularly given certain circumstances.
Piggybacking off of Jenna's question, when it is schematic and communication in the same, it's a bit of both there, how do you go about correcting that at this stage of the season?
You know, a lot of our issues or challenges are multi-layered and complex. It's just business in the NFL. It's chess, not checkers. And so we got to make some schematic adjustments. We got to make some divisional labor adjustments. But those are discussions that are ongoing week in and week out, even when you're successful. And so I'm not going to try to elevate that or mislead you like something is going on different. We got to put together a good plan this week. We got to do a really good job of presenting it to the guys. They got to do a real good job of absorbing it and preparing individually and collectively, and then we'll go into the stadium and play.
Mike, what did your offense need to do to kind of get back to where you were against Cincinnati the first time?
Take care of the football and stay on schedule. I think when we stay on the schedule and we take care of the football, we're a formidable group, and at times, particularly in the last several weeks, we've been spotty in those regards.
Anyone else? All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's Mike Tomlin. We're joined by Brian Bacco of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Brian, I think one of the main takeaways for me was Mike Tomlin basically giving George Pickens as far of a pass as you can give him for that interception. That, I mean, all the blame, Mike pretty much gave it to Russell Wilson, and Russell kind of had a different take about it after the game.
Yeah, I think what I'm confused by there, Austin, and good afternoon to you as well.
Great to see you.
You too. I mean, Russ said after the game that he thought George was going to go vertical on that play, but that it's still on him, which I agree with. I thought that was a case of both guys screwing up on that play. George didn't do his job, but Russ still had ample time to see that Justin Reed was floating over to Pat Freiermuth, and maybe he was going to do that anyway. But I'm just a little bit confused that Tomlin really kind of, I know Starkey, who we missed dearly today, always says everybody's running interference for Minkah Fitzpatrick around here. Mike Tomlin running interference for George Pickens again, it seemed like, because he could have easily just answered that with, yeah, things happen on any given play, and you know there's certain details that we don't need to get into. But no, I mean, he came out strongly to defend Pickens, and it seems like he sensed there might be a renewed discussion about George's route running or lack thereof and the precision. So yeah, I was a little bit confused by that, considering Russ himself didn't seem to think that play worked the way it was supposed to.
That's one thing that I took away from it, trying to defend Pickens as much as possible. But I also wonder if there is some troubled waters brewing with Russell Wilson a little bit too. Like, is the confidence that Mike Tomlin has in Wilson waning a little bit? Because he's made interception after interception in the last couple of games in important moments that they've needed it.
I don't know that I'd go that far. I mean, I think Mike Tomlin knows that Russell Wilson's an experienced vet. He knows that Russ knows he can't give the ball away like that. But at the same time, I also don't think Tomlin wants his quarterback falling on the grenade for everybody. He knows as well as anyone that there's plenty wrong with the Steelers right now. I don't think Russell Wilson is at the top of that list, not even offensively, let alone when you factor in all the disarray on defense, which was much discussed in that presser. And, you know, I think Mike Tomlin was fairly interesting on that at the beginning too. And, you know, Chris Carter asked him about what's going on with that group. And, you know, he said they bicker because they care. Excuse me, Jerry Dulac asked about that right off the bat. Tomlin said they bicker because they care. Emotions can be involved in that. I don't know if they're singing Kumbaya now after watching the film together and putting it in the rear view, but I do think because you're not going to be facing the Ravens, Eagles, Chiefs again in a 3-game span, as long as that slide doesn't break this group, this defense, and cause them to turn against each other and keep finger-pointing, I do think they have the talent, the experience to bounce back. Although, as Tomlin said, it does not really get any easier to face the Bengals' offense than the three they just saw.
No, I mean, if Burrow was in the same position record-wise as any of the other quarterbacks, you're talking about Joe Burrow as maybe the MVP of the league.
Yeah, Joe's been really good this year, but I still think I'd go Josh Allen. I mean, Burrow does have Jamar Chase and T. Higgins at his disposal. Let's not forget about that minor detail. You know, you have to split hairs when you get into the greatest players in the NFL right now. But as far as the MVP conversation, I'd probably have Josh Allen one, considering they kind of dismantled his skill position guys this year. They did get Amari Cooper back for him at the deadline, but they basically said, hey, he can elevate everybody around him. We don't need Stephon Diggs. He will distribute the ball. He'll be point guard, shooting guard, power forward, and center for us.
He's like LeBron out there.
Yeah, he puts the team on his back. I would have Lamar probably right after him, although he also got quite a boon with Derrick Henry coming in this season. I could go back and forth between Lamar and Burrow for two, but I still have Josh Allen at the top of the heap.
And then Barkley third. Here's what Russell Wilson had to say about the interception.
I think he's going to go vertical, but, at the end of the day, it can't happen. I was trying to give Pat a chance. He's hadn't done such a good job for us down the red zone, and they made a good play.
So Pickens stopped on the route as he was hand-fighting with McDuffie, only went 5 yards down the field, couldn't draw the safety read. Reed said on Twitter, he responded to a film breakdown by Dan Orlovsky, Brian, that's not the case. He was always going to go towards the middle of the field and try to make the interception against Freiermuth in coverage. If that's the case, who knows? But this is what Tomlin said about Pickens' role in the interception.
Mike, on the interception that Russ threw against the Chiefs, it looked like maybe George broke off his route a little early. Was that the case? And how do you maybe assess the effectiveness of George's route running?
Not at all. George's route running had zero to do with that interception. George was fine last weekend or last Wednesday.
I mean, that's as big of a defense that Mike Tomlin can give without being his lawyer that he could possibly give for George Pickens.
I mean, it could be a good defense from his lawyer if, he does take into account that Reed was always going to do that. But I don't think it absolves a guy of not carrying out his assignment on a given play. And this would not be a first time with George Pickens. This would be a second, third, fourth time, maybe, depending on your perspective with some of the lack of blocking in the past and, earlier this season against the Cowboys. I know a lot of people, the ball knowers, the film watchers were taking him to task for the route running. Terrell Owens, for some reason, chirped him on Twitter about not running the vertical route on that play and kind of allowing himself to get taken out of the picture there. I don't know. I mean, maybe Mike is right. Maybe he is somewhat sensitive to any sort of George Pickens scrutiny at this point. I've kind of thought for a long time now that they also want to protect George the asset as much as they do George the person and player. I don't think you really want a whole lot of dirty laundry getting aired out there if he's somebody who could have some interest around the league, if you don't want to extend him this offseason. I mean, that's all kind of 4D chess that maybe Mike Tomlin isn't thinking about I was going to say on a Tuesday at noon, but a Monday at noon in this case. So I still think that it was a pretty strong statement there from Tomlin on Pickens, and I do think it's still fair to wonder if his head's always in the game, if his focus is where it should be, and harnessing that is probably one of his toughest challenges right now as a head coach week in and week out.
So when Cam Hayward came out and said, when 10 guys do their job and one guy doesn't, we're screwed, Terrell Owens quote tweeted that and said, same on offense as well, when you got 14 not running his routes causing interceptions.
For a guy in George Pickens who really looks up to the star receivers of his youth, like
T.O. was one of them.
Chad Ochocinco. I mean, I'm almost certain they were. Both of those guys have had some fairly harsh criticism. And I think Chad Ochocinco has been more of like a big broing him type of thing with what he's said in the past. And I think I reached out. It was after the Browns game with the hand fighting with Greg Newsome out of the end zone. And I think Chad Ochocinco said he just wants to talk to George and try to mentor him in some way. Yeah, and not clear the air, but more of just like take him under his wing and show him how to deal with having the target on your back. And I asked George a few days later if Ochocinco had reached out to him, and he had no idea what I was talking about. So it's ironic that he's looked up to the Randy Mosses of the world, but I don't know who can sort of get through to George Pickens to keep his head on the straight and narrow, but you hope it clicks for him at some point here. And if it doesn't, then you're just going to be the next in a long line of more accomplished receivers than him 3 years in, who have bounced around on various teams and maybe lucked into some fortuitous circumstances to win a ring. But a lot of those guys did not over the course of their NFL careers.
The personnel on defense is obviously better, and they're paid significantly to be better. Highest paid defense in the NFL, where the offense is right in the bottom three. I think they might be the worst in terms of the amount of money that's spent on offense in the NFL. But in that same regard, I think the defense, Brian, might be in a worse position right now than the offense, despite having better personnel, because these communication issues are significantly costing them games. And Cam Sutton and Minka, I think, just can't figure it out. More so Sutton than Minka. But I don't think Minka should be absolved of all blame.
Not at all. And I just think Minka Fitzpatrick isn't exactly standing up there and being accountable either. Now, doing it in front of your team and doing it in front of us in the media are two different things. Obviously, I can't speak to every interaction that he has with teammates around him or maybe even in meeting rooms, whether it's team-wide or probably more likely defense-wide or even secondary-wide when they watch the tape back. And I would assume they're trying to discuss and discern why guys are running wide bleeping open, as Deshaun Elliott put it, after the Chiefs game. But I disagree with you, City, to the point that, like I said right when we came back from the Tomlin presser, they lost to the Eagles, Ravens, and Chiefs. They're arguably the three best offenses in the NFL. The Bills could like a word. The Bengals could like a word.
Detroit
could like a word. Minnesota, even right now, with Kevin
O'Connell. They got the coach of the year, and my guy Sam Darnold's looking pretty good.
But my point is, there's not necessarily any shame in losing to those three teams. Now, the double-digit losses are certainly more discouraging, and you want to be more competitive, especially as you're getting ready for the tournament, as Mike T puts it. But I think as long as you don't allow the failures there to rip this team apart and sow seeds of dissension from Elliott to Queen to Minka to Sutton or whomever else is involved in this bickering, as Mike Tomlin even allowed to use that word, then you can still bounce back and get it together. You still have the talent. You still have the pass rush that's going to spark it all with Cam Hayward collapsing pockets from the interior. TJ Watt, a healthy Alex Highsmith, Nick Herbig pitching in. You know, Queen has been downhill a little bit the last few weeks, again, against really good offensive lines and running backs too. Let's not forget, and quarterbacks. So I think as long as they don't let this, cause their defense to completely rip apart at the seams, I could see them beating the Bengals. I could see them still winning a playoff game. From there, it certainly gets thornier. But this offense, too, has a lot of issues to figure out, and some of them might be more schematic and talent-related than they are want to or all guys being on the same page.
Yeah, I definitely can see them beating the Bengals, but in the same notion, I felt like Russell Wilson was brought here to win at least one of these games. And like, I'm not saying you had to win all three. I'm not saying you had to win two, but I would have at least liked to see them win one of these games to prove, because it seemed like in the second half, they couldn't even play with the best of the best.
I didn't think they were among the NFL's best of the best. Even when they were 10-3, when they were dispatching the Jets, Giants, Raiders in handy fashion, or pulling out a big win against the Commanders in D.C.
But they thought that internally, that they were. Right? I mean, at least I think that they thought they were in that conversation, which Maybe. Is why I think they're as vocal as the defense was in the locker room.
There's 53 different mindsets and mentalities there, but I think you're probably right to the extent that they've lost three in a row here. It wasn't really a message of unity and confidence after a lot of these games. It was frustration, consternation kind of boiling over, and people like Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott dropping F-bombs left and right. I mean, I don't know that I've seen a Steelers defense that up in arms, even after a slide. And I think it probably is, to your point there, Austin, that expectations were higher for this year. You don't have the young or rookie quarterback excuse. You've got Russell Wilson in there now. And I maybe they did think that they were among the NFL's best. Maybe they were buying some of the hype. I just wasn't from where I sat. I thought they proved to me that they were better than mediocre this year. I think I picked them 9-8 going into this season. So I thought that they'd showed they're a good team, and I still believe they're a good team by most NFL standards, but I needed to see more to call them elite, and certainly didn't see that over these last three games.
They're good, but the problem is they're not great, and can they still become that at the end of the year? The Fan Text Line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. You could chime in, call in on the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. There's something else that stood out to Brian and I as we were listening to the press conference. The way that Mike Tomlin wants the Steelers to make significant splash plays and how they want to win games. What did Tomlin say? We'll play it for you coming up next. Sean has a headline, and there's a message from Malzi as well on the way. Austin Bechtold in for Joe Starkey and Bob Pompiani on the Pomp and Joe Show on 93.7 The Fan.
questions.
Mike, did you, when you met last Thursday, did you address some of the kind of bickering that was going on among the defense about each other, and did you quell that kind of?
You know, I didn't do much about it, man. They bicker because they care, and we weren't playing well. And oftentimes, the solutions is born out of conflict and confrontation, particularly when you're in the business that we're in. And so we're not going to let an issue like that be a big issue. It's really not. Guys expressing truth and working to seek solutions, and sometimes emotions are involved in that. And so most of the time when you get out of those circumstances, you're able to move on as a collective, and I feel like we certainly have done that.
I'm sure Mike Tomlin wishes he had two tickets to paradise as the bickering continued in the locker room for the Steelers. It was pretty vocal with Deshaun Elliott, Patrick Queen, Cam Hayward, and others calling out the team and different players on defense that were not making a significant enough factor. And Tomlin saying they bicker because they care. Brian, I feel like that's true. But Tomlin, I feel like, is so... he wants everything in-house. He wants everything to be taken care of in-house, not in the media. He doesn't give a lot of fuel to the fire, not a lot of bulletin board material. So I'm sure he wasn't necessarily pleased by all the comments that were made. And it being from Elliott and Queen, the most vocal out of anybody. Yes, Cam Hayward, who's been in the room. Yes, a little bit of Alex Highsmith, who's been in the room. But two newer Steelers, I think maybe that might have pushed him aside a little bit.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that Tomlin didn't just kind of shrug that off and say, you know, these things happen with teams and it doesn't always have to be for public consumption, or however he'd want to word that. I think you bring up a good point there, though, City Limits. You know, you don't want this to become like your favorite show, Big Brother, where yes, you've got factions, the new Steelers, the former Ravens, Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott are over here. The longtime Steelers, Minkah Fitzpatrick and Cam Sutton, are over here.
We're picking sides on this reality show.
Joey Porter Jr. is just trying to go to a different amusement park than Six Flags when he plays the Bengals for a second time.
Kenny Woods open, Joey. Still got time. I think it's closed now.
But. Beanie Bishop's just trying to figure out life in the NFL and probably sitting there today wondering why he didn't play a snap against the Chiefs. So, yeah, I mean, they're leaking oil right now in the back end. And as far as all those guys kind of having tough conversations and, you know, coming to the unfortunate truths that you're going to see. I mean, the film doesn't lie. They know what their jobs were. And I actually think, I know there's kind of been a discourse throughout the Pittsburgh media over these last 5 or 6 days since the Chiefs game. Sometimes we can't help ourselves and we have too much time on our hands, right? You
know,
we've had a lot of time on our hands. So it's become like, who's the guy everybody's talking about? Who are they trying to vote off Survivor, Steelers Island right now? I don't know that it's quite that cut and dried. I think it's probably a case of a little bit of the coach speak of, yes, on any given play, if there's 10 guys following the script and one guy going off script for whatever reason, either because he doesn't know the play or he thinks he can guess and cheat and be Superman and make a big play, or trying to compensate because maybe he's lost a step and thinks he needs to anticipate where the offense is going, then yeah, you're screwed. You know, you're going to be in big trouble when a guy's running free down the seam. So I think it's probably more of that than one particular guy is burrowing in, no Bengals pun intended, to be a double agent to take down the 2024 Steelers over the final month of the season. I think there's a couple guys who've probably been culprits of it more than others, and they're the ones who are going to have to answer to their teammates more than anybody during these film sessions. But it also is, and we, you know, referenced this during the last segment, you know, I tried to talk to Minkah Fitzpatrick as he's walking out of the locker room in Baltimore. He had no time a day. Tried to talk to him the day after the loss to the Chiefs. No interest in doing it. I think it's a little bit tough when you're a vet and, you know, if you don't have time for us in the media, that's one thing. Now young guys like Corey Trice need to stand up and talk. And they, you know, they're not perfect, but they're also not spokesmen for this team, and they're not the highly paid guys who are compensated to answer. And it's not answering to us reporters. It's answering to the fans who have a vested interest in this team and are going down to the games on Christmas and paying money to see
these guys.
And buying jerseys and stuff. And now they are the ones who are upset with the product on the field, and you know, we're a conduit to them. So I think that's been a little bit disconcerting as well. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for, you know, Joey Porter Jr. I just kind of goofed on him a little bit there with the Six Flags shot. But to his credit, he stood up after that Bengals game in Cincinnati and kind of took his lumps from us who were there and answered questions about all the penalties and answered questions about the press coverage on T. Higgins and that didn't go his way and some of the touchdowns allowed. You know, Minka doesn't always do that. I don't know about Cam Sutton after some of these recent games, but Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott, maybe they're not toeing the company line, but at least they're showing some passion and some fire and some want to, as Alex Highsmith put it after that Chiefs loss.
We're joined by Brian Bacco of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The 50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Austin Bechtold, your friend City Limits in for Pomp and Joe today. After Bob was, he joined us on the first segment. And how about Bob? He pulled a double dip. He joined us to start the show. And then he went on and did the Tomlin presser. Bob will be back in tomorrow.
We were all thrown for a loop with the game time not coming out until after Sunday night football. And I mean, in the NFL world, it's really all just about when you play. That determines the routine and the regimen for the week. And that trickles down to all of us who cover the team in various forms and fashions. So once Sunday became Saturday, Tuesday became Monday, our weeks were thrown off. Tomlin's a creature of habit. He wanted to make today a typical Tuesday.
So Bob goes there to Tomlin, and so, here I am.
So Bob responds accordingly. You respond accordingly. I respond accordingly. And now here we are. Steelers will practice these next 3 days, and they don't have a lot of time to turn it around. But as far as the solutions go, City Limits, and get your thoughts on this. Benching Cam Sutton, maybe that's one, but if it's not a one-for-one swap with Beanie Bishop coming in there, I mean, Mike Tomlin talked about how they've kind of been basing it on matchups, and I asked Terrell Austin about that a couple weeks ago. Are you riding the hot hand? Are there certain offenses you think Sutton's a better fit to play against, or Bishop's a certain fit to play against? Do they have any creative wrinkles up their sleeve for this home stretch? I mean, do they have the extra time now, both game plan wise, schematics wise, now practice wise, to put it into action these next 3 days? Can you use a three safety look a little bit more than you have? Can you move Minka Fitzpatrick? Do you want to move Minka Fitzpatrick around? Can you get Corey Trice involved in a way that he hasn't been before? I don't know what the answer is, but it might be an answer that's outside of just one of your two guys you've been running through there at the nickel position.
Well, when Mike Hilton was here, they ran the corner blitz, I don't know, maybe 35% of the time.
Here, you didn't have to worry about it. He'd just play every snap as your inside corner, and he was one of the best in the league.
And they've tried to bring Cam Sutton on a couple of instances, especially over the last couple of weeks, and it has failed miserably.
Well, he did get the roughing the passer call.
Well, that doesn't help.
Yes, he got there, and it was actually unfortunate for the Steelers that he got there.
Yeah, and I just feel like the way that he's playing, it's just shown too much overconfidence from Tomlin, that he was so eager and willing to go back to Cam Sutton after, look, the first week that he came back, they were easing him in after missing 8 games. They played Beanie Bishop. But since, it's been Cam Sutton who, I mean, what has Cam Sutton's big play been this year? What has been his big moment where he's been worthy of receiving those snaps compared to Beanie Bishop? Because, I mean, when you look at just the overall breakdown of the players, I don't think there's that sizable of a gap between Sutton and Bishop. But the more and more Sutton plays, the more I think the gap grows.
Here's what Terrell Austin said when I asked him about it a few weeks ago now before they faced the Eagles. So this was coming off of, I guess, the second Browns game it would have been. Yeah, and I said, are you guys riding the